So tonight we're doing a review of the spiritual principles that we've been studying alongside the pain of injustice. And tonight we're going to look at the larger picture of all of the principles or laws. So the invitation for the first part of the conference was to read through them and see which one you object to, which one you protest. So to start us off, I'm going to read through them. Not the entire page, but a few selections. Principle one is the law of self-responsibility. You create your own reality. Only you create your own happiness and unhappiness. Principle two, the law of paying the price. There is a price to be paid for each desired gratification. Every advantage has its disadvantage. There is a price to be paid for everything. Principle three is the law of cause and effect. Every act has its consequences in the sphere of present reality. The law of living in truth, or facing life. To face life's reality means to face yourself as you are, with all your imperfections, to embrace life wholeheartedly, without fear, without self-pity, or being afraid of being hurt. Say to yourself, in order to become what I would like to be, I must first, without fear or shame or vanity, face what is in me. Principle five, the law of brotherhood. To be able to open your heart to another being's spiritual help that you could not receive by yourself. Principle six, the law of transformation of negativity. The strength with which your divinity can penetrate the ego structure and manifest depends on the degree evil has been transformed through the evolutionary development. Principle seven is the law of lack of awareness. Lack of awareness of one area of your human personality prohibits awareness of another. It is one of the immutable spiritual laws that lack of awareness in one area in you prohibits awareness of another. This is why the path purification process is above anything else a process of making things conscious. This awareness unifies. It is the aim of this path's approach to spiritual reunion to help towards a reunification of everything that has ever split off. Principle 8, the law of consciousness reflects experience. Working out of abundance produces abundance, but working out of poverty and need produces more poverty and need. And principle nine, the law of fully inhabiting a state of consciousness in order to grow. This one is often called, you can't skip steps. You have to reach a certain state and fully be in that state before it can be abandoned for a further state. It is often overlooked by man and even more often totally ignored. This is one of the great important laws for man to know and deeply comprehend. So, Josie, if you'd like to press star 6, you're welcome to start anywhere you please.
Okay. The one that I guess I could say the one that I don't like the most is number one, the law of self-responsibility. Because even when I hear it, I cringe back a little bit because I guess I just like to lay back and have everything happen the way that it's happening, and not want to be responsible for it. So that's the one that I don't like the most.
So if you're willing, Jesse, to admit that is an act of the higher self. It's a paradox. But only the higher self would admit that they're imperfect, or that they are in resistance. So what kinds of things would you be looking at to go deeper into that principle and find the truth of it for you?
What should I be looking at?
Well, what I'm asking, and it's your choice whether you wish to answer, is I'm pointing out that it is an act of the higher self to make such a revelation.
Mm.
So from that place, from the place of the higher self, who sees something, do you have any sense of how you might go more deeply into this over time at your own pace?
Well, I could see, as you said, just even recognizing it, because other parts of me are saying in the background, oh, God, why did you say that? Because I can just hear that voice in the back. I don't know who that is, but it's saying, oh, why did you admit that? Why did you say that? Because there's a shame to it, you know, in that way. But yet, from the higher place, I could also hear another voice. Sis, you're going to lock me up for hearing all these voices. But there's a higher voice that says, is saying, it sounds funny, but it's saying, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a simple, you can do it. But, and sometimes it's saying we can do it.
Mm.
So it sounds like a supportive voice in a way that, and it also says, you've been doing it. So for me to hear those three messages from that higher voice are encouraging to me. And I suspect I should probably check in more with that voice than the one that's saying, oh, why did you say it? So that feels like a good thing to have heard that higher voice just right while I'm sitting here, and it seems like it would be better to, or that I want to check in more maybe with that voice. Seems to be more of like steering the ship in a steadier way.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be it.
Thank you very much, Jesse.
Thank you.
Thank you. Kathy, if you'll press star 6.
Hello.
Hi.
I would say that probably I'm with Josie. I also feel a big, depending on the day, I guess more than others, I feel that I want to reject the part about taking responsibility. It's like I want, I don't know, it's like even if it's not possible, it's like I want justice. So you know, it's like I want to find something wrong with that statement that about taking responsibility. Because then it's kind of like, in a way, it feels like condoning things that people have done in the past, kind of like justifying things that people have done in the past, and I want to rebel against that, against condoning that. So sometimes that's what it feels like if accepting that statement means that was okay, that it happened. I feel that there's a part of me that wants to open to the possibility of looking at it in a way where I can take responsibility. A lot of times when thoughts come to my mind about feeling resentment against certain things in the past, and I want to suppress it because I think it's the wrong thing to do. But I don't know, I kind of come to understand a little bit that it's not good to suppress it. I feel that I need to let it be there and look at it and see where the truth about taking responsibility can apply. Because it doesn't help trying to suppress it. So it's like accept it and then I might be willing to look at it if instead of repressing it, because repressing it is kind of like it keeps popping back, like you can't stop it popping back, it just keeps coming back. So in order to stop it from coming back, it's like I need to accept it, look at it, and see where I can take responsibility for my life at the moment. Because it's like not taking responsibility for the past is like not taking responsibility for the present. So I feel I need to stop trying to repress those thoughts and just look at them and be more willing to look into them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Paula, if you'll press *6, please.
Hello, Jane and everyone else. Yeah, I've been thinking while you were reading the laws, I was trying to identify the one, and I would describe here, but I was thinking I don't have a problem with any law. I actually find them pretty obvious to me, and I take them very easily. I think my problem is do that, apply them every single day lovingly, because, yeah, I tend to be very hard on myself and others. And so I take them. I think there's a law, and I totally accept that. But my problem is actually being softer and, yeah, apply them or being probably more careful analyzing them in a way that will make me more understanding of others while doing so. So, yeah, that's what I would have to say, actually. I think it's great to talk about it, and I'm happy to hear others, but I don't have anything else to bring up by now.
Okay. Paula, can I tease you a little bit?
Sure.
That sounds like an issue that you could work with is Principle 5, the Law of Brotherhood.
Yeah, that's true.
So I want to speak for just a second about the law of brotherhood. Sometimes it is true that we don't have an attachment to an individual law, but that means that we have issues with all of them. Because we're human beings, we have some issues with spiritual principles. And sometimes what I have found is that it's the law of brotherhood that we break the most by our harshness to ourselves and to others.
Yeah, I think that would be me.
It took me personally a long time to realize that I couldn't cheat and be harsh on me and be kind to others. That breaks the law. Because I'm supposed to be kind to everyone, including me.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think, if there's something I should and I have to work on, it is kindness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my day-to-day life, and I tend to be very pragmatic and direct and focused. And in with all of that, I sort of lose sometimes that sense of taking that on board and being, take the emotional side of people more in consideration.
Mm-hmm. This might be a place to start.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Paula. Akiko, if you will press *6, please.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I don't like taking responsibility either. But all principles make sense to me. But I don't like paying the price. That's kind of scary to me. Because, there's a price to be paid for everything. Everything means even good things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's kind of scary. I don't know why. But
it's okay.
I got confused. Paying price means there's a risk, isn't it?
Well, if you'd like to just work there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What is your perception of risk? Because these are not laws for human beings.
Mm-hmm.
You need to remember that these are spiritual principles.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if you want a lovely home,
mm-hmm.
you may need to spend some hours cleaning it.
Mm-hmm.
You may need to pay a certain amount of rent.
Mm-hmm.
You may need to stand up to your friends and say, don't treat my home like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you may need to be supportive to children and cats and dogs,
mm-hmm.
who don't understand how they might mess things up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm phrasing that as you may need to be supportive.
Mm.
These are prices that you pay, and you get something back.
Yeah, right.
Now, as we talked about a few weeks ago, on the human level, you can be cheated.
Mm-hmm.
But these are spiritual principles, mm-hmm. and therefore, the hard part is to come up to a spiritual level and really get that you cannot be cheated. So again, I like to tease about this. Paying the price on the human level, the risk is you'll get cheated. You'll pay the wrong price for the wrong thing. Your money will be taken away, and you still won't get what you want. But how does that work in spirit?
Mm. Wow, it's I never thought like that. It's really deep. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Well, thank you, Akiko. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Akiko.
Mm-hmm.
So we either have a very small group today or there's somebody else waiting to introduce themselves. If you'd like to introduce yourself, please press star 6. Okay. We're a small group today.
Hi, Jane.
So if, yes, hello?
Oh, sorry, Jane.
Hello?
Yeah,
yes?
This is Kim from Australia.
Hello, Kim. Welcome. Kim, have you been listening? Would you like to share?
Yes, I'm with the majority of the group with the law of self-responsibility. It's the one I like the most. Also, when I look at my life, the one that I obviously have the most problem with. And I also had a, you know, found that price when I first read about paying the price was made me feel quite scared, thinking, oh no. But after reading and meditating and things like that, I realized that, you know, self-responsibility, that I was already paying the price because I'm already living my life. So when I realized that I am self-responsible for my life, I realized also that I pay the price of what I create. In that when I have resistance or when I be a victim or if I blame others, I'm just trying not to be self-responsible, but I'm also trying not to pay the price. And so that was a real revelation. I can see that my fear of paying the price was related to my, you know, my blindness about the self-responsibility of my own life. So it's a relief to take full responsibility for your life, because if you can take full responsibility for your life, then you can actually change it. You're the only person that can. So that whole refusal to take responsibility is keeping you in the pain. So it was actually very very mind blowing. That one.
Okay, thank you, Kim.
Oh, you're welcome.
Anyone else want to take a turn before we start again? Okay. Then, actually, I will. I'm going to follow through with Kim about my personal revelation about taking responsibility. And the biggest revelation was some number of years ago. And while it may have been 20 years ago, it's not that I'm immune to it. It's just that once I took responsibility in a big way, the smaller ways are easier. And what I got was what Kim said. What I got was and this is without pathwork. This is just, I'm translating it into pathwork. That what I was trying to do was avoid responsibility, so I had made myself dependent on another person. And I was living my life according to their values, their beliefs, their dreams, their hopes, their prejudices, their everything. And I think what happened was that I felt that I was paying way too high a price for something that I didn't like. So I saw at that time that I did not like the life that I had created as an emotionally dependent person. So I stopped, which, of course, is a process. And taking responsibility is hard. It's as if you're trying to lift a burden and your muscles aren't well developed and it hurts and you get tired easily. But bit by bit, you develop strength and experience, and you actually can get help, which is something that we may not realize. We can get help. And I began to enjoy paying the price. So when I came across the spiritual lectures, I was thrilled because my experience was that instead of trying to avoid, I had tried to pay. I had tried to uncover stuff and pay. And when I did that, I feel that I got what I paid for because it wasn't to a human being. So it is my personal experience that underlies my joy in bringing these lectures forward. So that's mine. So let me see. We'll start. Quite honestly, I lost my place. So let me see if I can find the week four list. So I'm going to read a guide quote. And it says, "So I beg of you, my dear friends, consider the outer conflicts that come to you as an answer to your prayer. If you will only turn the other direction, instead of becoming defiant and hurt, turn inside, turn around, no matter how wrong you think others may be. Ask yourself, ask your Father in heaven, isn't there some grain of truth somewhere? By recognizing it, I will continue to learn and develop." So, Josie, consider with scrupulous honesty what might be true here for you. What might be the grain of truth in your higher self message? Press star 6. Josie, are you there?
Can we hear me?
Hi, yes, I can.
Hello. Oh, okay.
Hi, yes, Josie.
Something weird happened. Okay, something weird happened with that. Beauty. The grain of truth in...
The grain of truth in your higher self's voice or in the principle itself?
The grain of truth. Well, in the principle itself, I guess, is that I'm being resistive to the grain of truth, I guess.
So can I help here?
Yes, please.
If you're not resistance, change is going to happen.
Yeah.
And what I would like to honor is how big that may seem to you.
It is big, and you know, I like to be responsible for the good things, but I don't like to be responsible for the not good things. But I can see, you know, looking. Say I look back at a few things, I could see that if I was more responsible and I did it a different way, it would have turned out different. It totally would have turned out different. Even if I didn't do anything, it was better than the things I did, and it would have turned out a different way. So there is a grain or a or a truckload of grains to it. Yeah. I live on.
Josie, what I'm hearing. What I'm hearing. Yeah, sorry, Josie. What I'm hearing is you already have taken responsibility.
For what?
Well, here's what I hear. I can see where if I'd done something different, the outcome would have been more positive. Isn't that taking responsibility?
Well, I guess when you're looking back, yeah. Rather
so
than,
here's what I'm suspecting. Go ahead.
Because you could not say that and just, you know, you could not say that, and that would be not taking responsibility.
So here's what I'm suggesting. Is it possible that you're reading the phrase, the law of self-responsibility, as if it said the law of being blamed?
Being what?
Blamed.
Oh, blamed. Well, like I have this list of things in my mind that I'm applying this to, and for some of them, yes, I could see where that would apply, but and for some of the other things that I am to blame. It's clear as day. I am to blame for the some of the consequences.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm suggesting is, if you see that and you are admitting it, aren't you taking responsibility for it? What else do you think could possibly happen?
Yeah, I could see it. I could see it, and I could also say I haven't said that all along. Only recently, since we're working on this subject matter, so I guess I could say I'm just now maybe taking responsibility for things that happened many years ago and ongoing. But maybe now I'm taking responsibility. I wasn't talking like this years ago.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel that Spirit is holding a stopwatch about how you do it and when you do it?
Well, it does sound silly when you hear yourself say it. I guess there isn't a stopwatch. I guess whenever you do it is, hallelujah, you did it. You did it. It
mm-hmm.
was something you did, so good.
Mm-hmm. So what I was trying to do here is where we get trapped with these spiritual principles is without being aware of it, we're taking human situations and projecting them into spirit. In human situations, if you admit that you're responsible for something, somebody might not shut up about it for 20 years.
Yeah.
So sometimes we don't take responsibility because of the human repercussions. But this is not about human repercussions. This is about the inner work in our own heart.
Mm. Nice to hear it that way.
Yeah. Do you want to add anything else?
No, thank you.
You're welcome. Kathy, if you'll press star 6.
Hello?
Hello, Kathy.
Hi.
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 So the question is, what is the grain of truth in your higher self voice or in the spiritual principle?
Well, I feel that your conversation with Josie was very fruitful for me, because I do realize that I do project a lot of things from what I will call human law into a spiritual law, and that is like you expressed, that's like what stops me from finding out more, because there is this dread, you know, suddenly somebody's going to come and sentence you to, you know, to death or to some dungeon, or, you know, and that you are going to be forever damned. And that's very real, extremely real. And I can see how doing that really is not beneficial, but also I can see that it's really, really helpful to start looking at the spirit in the way that it is, rather than applying the experience of living in a world that is, you know, ruled by all these human laws that are so harsh. So it makes it more inviting to try to explore what it really is, and and trust. Like I feel that I can trust more that is something that I would like to do. Because there is a resistance there to explore, because of the same reason that you've been talking about, like all these things that you expect to happen if you admit or if you explore. So it is really, really important, I feel, for me to understand more what the spiritual laws are, how they work, in order to gain the strength to work, you know, to do this type of work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much. It's really good.
Thank you, Kathy. Paula, if you'll press star 6. Paula?
Hello. Hi.
Hi, Paula.
Yeah, no. Hello. I was thinking where I can really tell the role, and I'm glad you actually helped me identify the brotherhood law as the one I should have more issues with. And I've been thinking that there are some occasions when I try to really understand. I mean, when I'm in a situation or judging or assessing someone else's behavior, when I'm able to really put myself to the other person's position and I really understand where the person is coming from, sometimes there's like a click in my mind. I feel, wow, that it's like it's something new or something it is new to me because I probably had been ignoring it. So, yeah, I mean, I had a few occasions lately when that happened. I feel like it's a new realization about, you know, totally different new point of view for whatever question. So, yeah, I think it's great and it's beautiful when I can identify that and I can use it in my life, and I just can, what I feel is I can only try to have that happening more often, because I do feel it's truly beautiful when I can really understand, and I see that it's really opening my heart, really, really
listen so and understand the situation so I can really see what's really behind what is, you know, the emotion. So yeah, that's what I would have. This
beautiful follow, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Akiko, if you'll press star 6.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay. After your explanation about paying twice, my point of view has a little bit changed. And I feel like life or universe fair to me. So I feel it's strange. It's not strange, is it? Yes, it makes me feel relief and safe. Not safe, relief. Yeah. Because that means everybody has opportunity to grow up, right? Even really bad guy, right? Yeah, that. I like it. Yeah.
Great to hear you laugh. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Akiko.
Yeah.
Someone interjects something here before Kim goes. Yeah, someone interjects something here before Kim starts. Sometimes when we are given a spiritual principle that is in distortion, such as, and I'm struggling very hard here not to use any specific religion or point of view, but that's hard for me because I have certain experiences, but risking offending someone. If you take the principle of do unto others as they do to you, okay, that's a beautiful principle in its truth, but it is very often misapplied or applied with distortion. And so what we do is we not only reject the distortion, we reject the principle. And then years later, somebody comes along and they say, do unto others, and you immediately cringe, and you immediately go into the pain of the distorted energy that you experienced, which is true. It's absolutely true. But that's not about the principle. It's not about the spiritual principle. It's about the human reality, the human dynamic that you experienced under the words of truth, under the words of spiritual principle. Okay? So one of the images that works for me is when you try on a principle, you really need to try it on and walk around with it. It's like buying a new pair of shoes. You can look in the window and they look good, and you buy them and take them home, they're the wrong size, they don't fit, they hurt. And you can say, buying shoes is expensive and you don't get your money's worth. Or you can go in and try them on, but when you wear them all day, they don't work. And you can say the same thing. Or you can take responsibility for the fact that your feet are perhaps not quite the same as everybody else's, and that you really don't know if a pair of shoes fits until you walk in it for a while, and stop buying $300 shoes and start buying $10 or $20 shoes so that you can afford to buy a few and find the perfect pair of shoes for your feet. And that is how I perceive spiritual law, and that is how I perceive taking responsibility. Now, again, I'm using my personal experience because I have strange feet. and I have a very hard time finding shoes. So I can't afford to buy expensive shoes because I don't know for sometimes a week whether those shoes are going to work for me. By taking responsibility and saying that's who I am, I don't even have to go into the spiritual meaning of it. That's just who I am. I take responsibility. And I find a way to work with what I want to pay a reasonable price for a reasonable product instead of a hopeful price for something that may not suit my needs and then be angry about the price. So I encourage you to think about these principles just as you have done, Akiko, which I would like to honor. You heard it phrased differently, explained differently. You tried it on. You kind of tried this and tried that and thought about this and thought about that and then say, never thought about it that way before. And that is what Pathwork is encouraging us to do. Try these on. If they don't work or they're a problem, put them down. There are plenty of things to work on. You won't run out of spiritual work. So I wanted to thank you, Akiko, for how you played with the principle in the sharing.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you. So, Kim, if you'll press star 6, please.
So, what was the question again?
That's okay. The question was, what is the grain of truth in your higher self voice, or what's the grain of truth in the principle?
Right. Well, actually, I'm not sure if this is on topic, but it is slightly. While you were talking to Josie about what you were talking to in the blaming and stuff like that, I'd had a little question mark next to in Pathwork Lecture 171 where it says about our childish illusions of omnipotence, so that the law of self-responsibility helps to remove that. And I was thinking, I didn't know what that meant, so I just put a little question mark next to it. But as you were talking to her, I kind of thought, so you'll have to tell me if this is right, that belief that we're omnipotent is kind of like, with the law of self-responsibility, we're being responsible, but when we think that we're omnipotent, it's sort of like we're also taking the blame for it. And so I was thinking that by taking the blame for it is the distortion, rather than just being responsible, because like I can be responsible for the beliefs I created when I was a child as a result of the situation I was in. But I don't have to blame myself for that. Like I wasn't an evil, wicked child because I believed those things. But the fact that I did believe them is created different things in my life, so I can take responsibility for that and let go of the blame, because by blaming myself in a way, I'm keeping myself as a victim, but then I'm a bad, evil person.
That's it. I think you got it.
Yeah. All right, okay. Yeah. So I was just looking at it when you started talking about blaming, so I thought that was really a real coincidence. The grain of truth. Sorry?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I was going to say was what the guide's talking about when he says childish illusions of omnipotence is exactly what you're talking about. The child wants all the power to prevent harm from happening. But even the child knows if he gets that power, he's going to have to use it well or he's going to make a mistake. Even a child knows the danger of taking on something he can't handle. And so that's why the phrase is the childish illusion of omnipotence, because it's an illusion and we cast it off like a flower will cast off its petals at the end of the summer. It's just a phase of development. But if we get stuck there for some reason, then we don't release the illusion. And the illusion works both ways.
Mm.
So you were going to go into grain of truth.
Grain of truth in the law of responsibility in my life, or, I mean, because I see how all of it is true. I just think that the most pertinent thing to me is the liberation that when we have responsibility in certain things, how liberating that is to me. It's just that now I tell kids that we've all got a magic backpack on our back, and if we don't feel and release things, let them go, take responsibility for that, feel it and let it go, then we carry it around in our magic backpack forever. So taking responsibility for me is that opportunity to go around life with a smaller backpack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's the liberation of the freedom that it brings. But it's also the most difficult things to do. So. Yeah, actually, I can't think of anything else other than that.
That's great. Thank you, Kim. So, we've got a smaller group than we normally have, and it's only 8 o'clock. So I wondered if we could go around and find out from all of you what you might like to do in the next hour. So, Josie, do you have any sense of where you'd like to go with this in the next half hour, hour?
I thought what we just did was very helpful and interesting to be able to say one of those laws and how it affected us. I would do something like that again, another round of that.
You want to give it a shot?
Now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the other law that was striking me was number 8, the law of coming from poverty and expecting abundance. The twist that lies within that, because that is what I do. I come from the place of, oh, there's nothing, and then I look for the abundance, and I don't know that it's getting me good results.
So. Again, just saying that is a way of taking responsibility, just the possibility. So there's a connection there. Okay. So
yeah.
What might be a way of taking one step? What would one step look like?
Well... And when I say the words poverty and abundance, I'm not talking about like physical poverty and then getting something material and calling that abundance. What was striking me about it was like I'm not real connected to like happiness and joy. It's hard for me to connect with that. So how I've mostly been living was that I'll dip into the negative and expect something, you know, positive to come out of it, but yet I really don't want the positive thing, the joyful thing, because I don't know how to connect to it. So instead of, like, picking out a joyful thing and then expecting something even more joyful, I pick out the negative thing and then sort of only get another negative thing.
Mm-hmm.
So just hear even the words of that law, like, if you want abundance, you have to come from abundance. I don't even like to connect with the part that says you have to come from abundance, because I don't like to pick from that. So it just made me feel like
a smaller step.
Yeah.
So if we took a smaller step, in other words, what I see here is that you might be looking at a too big a step. I can't come from abundance, and we'll just work with those words. I know you're talking about something else, but we'll talk about abundance, poverty, just to stay with the phrasing. Instead of saying, I can't be abundant, so I can't come from it. That's true. Okay. How can you bring more generosity into your life, into your sphere of influence? I'm not asking a question. I'm making suggestions that one of the ways you can approach an issue around abundance is to look at some mechanical help. How can I be around people who are less miserly? How could I volunteer my time 2 hours a week so that I was around a system where people gave their time? Okay. If we talk about happiness, how could I watch more comedies instead of more tragedies if you're a movie person? I found at one point in my life I was watching way too many tragedies and serious things. Somebody asked me, don't you have any romantic comedies? And I looked at them like they were crazy. Why would I have a romantic comedy? And it stayed with me. I thought, you know, honey, there's something wrong with your collection. You know, it's just everybody has a romantic comedy. And I began to realize that I was really skewed in my tastes towards the serious. And I made room for romantic comedies, not idiotic romantic comedies that were good, that fit my parameters, that made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. I had to work to find them. And that's what I'm suggesting is, if you're very clearly stating this. So my invitation to you. Oh, good.
Well, a flash that just came in as you were saying that, somewhere in one of these steps of work that we've been doing, I don't know if it was on the ego or which one it is was from right now. I have to look back, but there was somewhere where I got clear that I had a choice in it. There was a choice in a situation to pick, to take a minute and decide how I was going to act, or we were going to, I remember, it was between will, reason, and emotion, that in any instance, we have an option now to pick which way we're going to go. So that concept rushed into my mind as you were speaking, that instead of just automatically going to the poverty place, that maybe not in every instance do I have to go immediately to the poverty place. Maybe in certain instances I could come from abundance more.
Mm-hmm.
Not every single time, but like that. So like that choice piece came in as a small step.
Right.
Yeah, that would be how, like you said, pick the better movie, pick the choice, pick the instances where I could handle coming from abundance and practice from there a little bit more. So that makes, that's a step.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Thank you, Josie. So, Kathy, if you'll press star 6, the world is your oyster, what would you like to do?
Hello? I guess one of the points that I struggle with a lot is getting into a situation, I mean, delving into, like, taking time aside to actually...
I'm sorry, could you say that word again? Delving into...
Into a spiritual, like, internally, like, taking time aside to explore.
Okay.
Because a lot of times I do that throughout my day, like, when I'm interacting with people, when I am doing something, cooking or whatever I'm doing, I'm kind of doing it. It's kind of like I'm trying to explore things while I'm doing something. However, I feel that I need to take time aside to just do that rather than do it while I am busy doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get myself out of that and take time aside to kind of work on being on my own and just reflect about things. So I think that's part of my taking responsibility, being able to value, because that's the thing that I probably don't put enough value into it,
mm-hmm.
because it feels like, for example, like if you're doing exercise and you do a little bit of exercise, you feel like, okay, that was nothing. And then if you do a lot of exercise and your heart starts racing and you feel something moving in your muscles, like you say, okay, I did something. But then,
mm-hmm.
if I do a more minor exercise, I'm like, okay, that was okay. But it's like you can't feel the result. Like you can't feel it in your body that you did something.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm having trouble in that sense to make time to be on my own and sit down and think about things and reflect. And so that's where I just kind of been avoiding it because I'm trying to avoid being in that situation where I'm kind of thinking to myself, okay, was that enough? Did I do enough? Did that do something? Did I accomplish something by doing that? It's like, so I guess, yeah, that's like a bit of a difficult thing where I start doing it for a time and then I stop. And at the moment, I feel that I want to do it, but I'm avoiding it. Yeah, so that's what I wanted to say.
So, Kathy, what I hear is that this is another area where human beings and spiritual work don't really match, because human beings want to know what you got out of that hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Spirit would not make such demands. So we may sometimes we take the impatience of other human beings. I gave you an hour and a half by yourself. What'd you do with it?
Yes.
Right. So it sounds very important to me to give yourself what you need. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Paula, if you'll press star 6.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I was thinking what I would like to do, and I was thinking about what law brotherhood and everything I should be focusing on. But I just realized a few things have been going on in my life. Less than a year ago, I moved to a smaller place, new job, everything, new life, which helped me focusing on the spiritual side of my life, slowing down, and a series of things that are good for me spiritually. Now, my position at work sort of changed, and I have to deal with a lot of politics and pressure, and I realize that it's probably my issues with the law of brotherhood are stronger now because my work has been requiring me to be so hard and strict and tough, which has been great because I'm able to achieve a lot. But spiritually, it's becoming even harder for me because I have to be always on guard, always sort of prepared for anything or to look for what people can be doing against me or what could be going. So I would just really ask for any suggestion, anything you can think of for me right now, because it's great that I realized that today, that I need to work on it. And what I try to do a lot of the time is saying that being strict and being fair at my work, I can bring, can contribute to the greater good of people being, being good. That's why I have been so supported in a spiritual way. But on the other hand, I find I've been coming even tougher. So it's hard falling into the old place again when I was life and concentrating on material things and politics, where then, the emotions of people, why they chose something.
Mm-hmm.
So, that would be my question. Anything you can...
So here's what I got. Okay, this is my instinct to reply.
Mm-hmm.
What a wonderful gift you could give to all of us if you could learn to balance your loving heart with rules and regulations that are intended to support us. So here's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I hear that you have a tender heart, and I hear that the job is making you have to be hard and tough. What if this is an exercise for you to learn to balance your love and your loving heart with the realities of some situations? I want to phrase that as the realities of some situations. And what most people do is they choose dualistic thinking. I can either be warm and loving, or I have to be hard and tough. And what I hear is, this is an opportunity for you to try to integrate the two. And of course, it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, no, it's not. What I try to focus on is being fair. Because even though I sometimes have to be strong to be able to be fair, at least I am strongly connected to the greater good. So being stronger, I'm still connected to a positive end or something that delivers something that is in line with the guide or the greater good or positive energy or something like that. No, that's fine. I think I just need really to be continue focusing on it. It's just that with the pressures and possibly it's my own arrogance that's coming from getting so many good results that make me too comfortable and stop focusing on the energy of everything that I've been working on. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Jen.
Yeah. So a very good teacher of mine was instrumental in showing me how I was always looking for the right answer instead of looking, just looking, and allowing things to unfold. And my looking for the right answer was a way of trying to make myself safe. It didn't feel like that, but that's what it was. And to have a warm and loving heart and having to handle a difficult job, you can fear being too hard or too soft. But the lectures speak of dynamic balance, that there's no one way to do anything. And dynamic balance means you'll be a little bit harder, you'll be a little bit too hard sometimes, and a little bit too soft. But you can come up with a balance that works. And by accepting the imperfection, by accepting that you'll never get it perfectly, you leave your heart open so that every time you try to do something, you try to do the best you can. So it sounds like a wonderful opportunity. So I realize you muted yourself, but I wanted to say that. Yeah. Thank you, Paula. Akiko, if you'll press star 6, please.
Hi. I'm not sure what I want to do now, but I feel like I'm now standing a new start line, and I want to see the truth through my, you know, imaginations or fear, because I already got bored to be afraid of them. So I want to move on, and then, I want to see the truth. Because everybody has the truth of their own. And I didn't see that so far because I'm afraid, I'm really afraid, you know, because of my image. But I now I realize that you know, we are all weak. We are all now burning. Yeah, that doesn't mean I feel safe always, but yeah. I think I'm ready to move on. Yeah. Yeah, I'm still, yeah, in the darkness, though, but... I wanna get out of here. Yes.
Thank you, Akiko.
Thank you.
So, Kim, if you'll press star 6. Kim?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. The truth, the principle that I'm looking at in my life at the moment is like sort of work through the responsibility and paying the price of cause and effect is living in truth, facing life. And that's one that I think is a bit of a challenge to do completely for me. Because facing yourself as you are without fear and self-pity and all that sort of thing. Or the fear of being hurt. So, yeah, that's one that I'm working on that I think is worth another look. Yeah, it's just moving from looking at your life, all the different things that happen on the outside, from, you know, I grew up in a very abusive family and all those kind of things, to looking within and facing all that. It's, yeah, that one's a bit tricky, that one is.
So can I ask you, Kim, if you would, can you make a case for not doing it? I'd like to hear your case for not doing it. I'm encouraging you to play
with
it. Yeah,
it's just... Well, I can see... I can definitely see how I need to make a case. It would be the fear or feeling that it was true. Which, of course, you know, I know from the past that lectures, it's not, you know, it's not the real self, and all those things are just the images and things that you, the mask that you use to face the world, the mask that was developed from that childhood. But it's facing all that and allowing it to evolve. That's the trick. But so it's just the fear and also seeing it. Think, oh my goodness, is that how people see me? Yeah.
So you have kids, and I don't know how universal children's books are, but I found one for my granddaughter called, it's by a gentleman called Mercer Mayer, and it's called There's an Alligator Under My Bed.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote another one called There's a Nightmare in My Closet.
Yeah.
And the story about There's a Nightmare in My Closet goes like this. The kid is hiding in his bed with his covers up to his nose. He says, there's a nightmare in my closet. I know it's there, and I don't know what to do, and I'm really, really, really frightened. And then he gets tired of being frightened. And he gets his pop gun, and he slowly walks over to the closet door, and he throws it open, and in the book there's a huge monster with polka dots. And the monster says, please don't hurt me. And he says, I don't care. And he shoots it with the pop gun. which has a cork in the end with a string, which they don't allow nowadays, but when I was a kid, you could have them. And the pop gun pops the monster, and the monster starts to cry. And the kid says, "I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to," and brings the monster over to his bed and tucks him in and gets in bed with the monster and says, "Boy, I hope there's not another one because there's no more room."
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in the children's book, there's another monster in the closet who has stripes.
Uh-huh.
There's a reason children's books are popular. There's a reason literature, classic literature, is popular. And that is because they contain truth.
Mm-hmm.
You can lay in bed with the covers up over your head every night, or you can get up and look in the closet. And if there is a monster, you have to deal with it. If there isn't, you go back to bed. So in the real world, you can't. You have to choose, and that choice becomes your life. And although spirit is not as distorted as human beings, what is true for humans is also true in spirit. If there is something in you that you are afraid of, it will never develop until you bring it to the surface, to awareness, so you can start working on it.
Yes, it's very profound.
And the way I describe it when I work in workshops is this. If you have a part of you that is a screaming three-year-old, and you are uncomfortable with it because it acts out all the time, and you shove the screaming three-year-old in a closet and close the door, when you come back to the closet 20 years later and open the door, spiritually, the three-year-old is still screaming. And one day you're going to have to bring that three-year-old part of you out of the closet and begin the process of moving it along in its development cycle.
Yeah.
And that's my understanding of what paying the price means. You've got to pay the price of shoving that kid in the closet for 20 years, so now you're a mature woman, except for this part.
Yeah.
Because you were embarrassed to do it when you were 17. Or 23.
Yeah.
Or 28. And in terms of working with other people, what are the joys for me in working with all of you? Is you find out that everybody's doing similar work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find and connect with people who are doing work in truth as best they can, they don't laugh at you for having a screaming three-year-old. They've got a screaming two-year-old or screaming four-year-old. Just like young mothers, it's very helpful to talk to other young mothers and learn that a child is very frustrating and sometimes you get angry at it. If we don't talk to other people who are in the same situation, we may think that we're very bad for having such feelings.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
So I'm going to take the mute off because we don't have too much background noise. So it's possible that we're done for this evening. I personally hear a lot of work's been done by all of you. So just because we're done early does not mean we didn't do work. It may reflect the quality of the work that we've done.